Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Detroit from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, the Elaine Massacre. On September 30th, 1919, a meeting in a church in Elaine in rural Phillips County, Arkansas, to discuss forming a union to fight for fair payment for the honest and hard work of black sharecroppers was interrupted with gunfire from a group of white agitators. The black guards at the church fired back, killing a white man. This resulted in a massacre of black people in Elaine. The death toll was, they had different numbers for the death toll. Of course, you know, they tried to cover this whole thing up. And also the death tolls, they don't know, they had counts from 50 to hundreds of people who were murdered by hordes of white people, civilians and quasi-military and military organizations. Black Wall Street, the Black Wall Street Massacre in Tulsa, Oklahoma took place in 1921. And as many as 300 people were murdered. That same kind of thing, I think, with that one, with the death toll, they don't really know because they weren't trying to keep count of that type of thing, you know. Like the Elaine Massacre, the Tulsa Race Massacre was barely mentioned in the history books. In fact, Tulsa wasn't mentioned until the late 1990s when a state commission was formed to document the incident. So I never heard of the Elaine Massacre before until recently, actually. Within the last year. Couple of months, actually. From there, the word went out that black folks are murdering white folks in Elaine. That's all it took. Black folks murdering white folks in Elaine. Black folks have been accused, judged, convicted, and executed for crimes they did not commit. Till this very day. It's founded. Well, it's not a surprise. I can't even say it's a surprise. But, you know, just tying and, you know, connecting the dots to why certain groups of people behave the way they do toward black people. You know, they're quick to kill, quick to convict, you know, as the courtrooms, as convictions show, you know, quick to shoot, as the statistics, the statistics show, black folk, you know, it seems like it stems from their history, their socialization, because they've always been quick to kill black folk, so we really shouldn't be surprised about police force, which was started off as the slave catchers, right? Or, you know, target black people because that's their history. Black people have historically been targeted in this country, and I'm sure in other places. And it comes out, you know, in people's behavior, how they treat you, whether or not they hire you, how they treat you when you move in your neighborhood, how you come into their store, if you live past an encounter with them, you know, and what they say as it is, you know, motivated them to, in some cases, kill a black person. You know, use, you know, excessive force. But yet they don't call it excessive force. They never call it what it is. But here's a guy shot in self-defense, returned fire, and a whole community suffered for it. Because someone decided to say a black person, black people were murdering white folks. So here we go again. Article, for the most part, from the New York Times. They talk about the forgotten history of America's worst racial massacre. I don't know what was worse, this or Tulsa, or some of the stuff we probably never heard of before. I don't even know. But let's just say, they say hundreds of black citizens were killed in Elaine, Arkansas, a century ago this week. This was written in 2019. Anyway, they said, perpetrators suppressed coverage of the events, and the victims terrified black families, had no one to turn for help. They said the local police were complicit in the killing of untold numbers of African Americans. See? And, you know, it says one of the worst instances of racial violence in American history. It took place in a region they call the Delta that defined itself by its violence and oppression. Right? Two very stable components of slavery. Maintaining slavery. One African American, William Pickens, described the region as the American Congo. Elaine, though an isolated plantation region, was part of the broader social upheaval following World War I that came in from a massive came in the form of massive strikes and racial confrontations, both at home and abroad. That sound familiar? Anyway, they basically said that the soldiers, the black soldiers that went to war in World War I were emboldened, right, by their experience, their war experience, and their training and their experience in war. African American veterans returned to the Delta to demand the full rights of citizenship and justice, not only before the law, but also in their labors. In Phillips County, this struggle directly challenged planter dominance, plantation dominance. They used the word planter, but hey, it's a plantation. It's about, it's not even 100 years after slavery. And was supposed to be ended. So anyway, planter dominance or plantation dominance is indicative of slavery. This is from Provocative Thought, y'all. So I'm not to get it confused with New York Times. Planter dominance or plantation dominance is indicative of slavery and the continued oppression of black people perpetrated by white oppressors. Emboldened by their war experience translates to white folk trained these niggas to kill, allowed them to kill white folk in the war. Now they are returning to their oppressed state and somehow have a big idea that they can unify and fight against the oppression and racism here. How dare they rise up and attempt to take this white foot off their neck and out of their backside. What the hell is wrong with these niggas? Emboldened. Now, note, black people have fought this demon from the time they were placed on slave ships to the time they arrived in colonial America and ever since. Blacks have been hired for jobs left open due to white inscription into the military, right? Because you don't need the draft. picking anybody to fight this big world war, right? So black people have been hired for the jobs that were open. So they took the jobs because these guys went to the military to fight the other oppressive, racist, worldwide white supremacy threat in Europe, right? Germany. When these white soldiers returned home, they joined the fight to get their jobs back, and that means actual fight, as in violence and intimidation. That fight being the terrorizing of the black people they believe to be occupying their space in the employment line. They presented a direct threat to their capacity to provide for their families, and as you know, white comes before black, if black comes at all. The New York Times article went on to say, when the Great Migration began, a factory wage in the urban north was typically three times more than what black people could expect to make working the land in the rural south. So these sharecroppers, who basically are working into debt, right, based on the sharecropper system, were able to actually come up by working in a factory. That's actually a giant step, three times more. Well, so in the town of the Lane was the center of the rapidly changing lumber and plantation economy, known for harsh working conditions. Now, what does that mean? Sharecroppers worked the land for a small share of the crop and were forced to sell their cotton to the landowners who paid less than market prices. So they're being cheated, and they're just being cheated every step of the way. So they're basically slaves. Because, you know, you want a slave to eat, you want him to have some comfort so that he can continue to work. Workers all had to buy food, clothing, household wares, tools, seed, and fertilizer at the plantation commissary, which charged exorbitant, real high, very, very high interest rates. Right? So you're going to owe. You're probably going to owe double what you owe. You borrow a dollar. I'm just giving you an example. I don't know exactly what the interest rate was. You borrow a dollar, you got to come back with $1.50, $1.75. I don't know. Maybe $2. Who knows? It was a system intended, right, to keep black people in debt and dependent upon planters, they call, but they are the plantation owners. The reason why this is important, because you got to understand the systems of today come from somewhere. They come from people. They come from the people of yesterday, the people in power of yesterday. These are the people who were in power not so long ago yesterday. They have an impact on the systems that were created that exist today. They have an impact on how people are seen, viewed, treated. As we all saw on the 6th, that's a hell of an insurrection. You're not attacking the military, but you saw the people attacking the house. And to our surprise, and to some people's not surprise, they weren't gunned down. Sure, one lady was shot. A couple people got trampled or something. They killed a police officer. But we all thought to ourselves, man, what if that was black folks? here we have white folks throwing another tantrum because they say a black man did something that he really had no business doing in their eyes, defending himself. That's another slave concept for a black man to stand up, defend himself in a smart way. They wasn't even trying to do nothing violent. These guys were just saying, hey, we're going to get a lawyer. We're going to get a union. We're going to get a lawyer. We're going to go. We want our rights as citizens. We're going to read the law, and we're going to get make them apply the law to us as citizens. And, you know, they had enough of this slave stuff, you know. Come on, we just fought the war with you guys. I saved some of you guys' lives. And had to come back here and fight you. Anyway. It was a system intended to keep black people in debt and dependent upon the plantation owners. I'm going to say plantation owners. They say planters in the writing. Legal disenfranchisement stripped them of the vote and an ability to share in any benefits of citizenship. Right? So, from provocative sort, the harsh working condition is what we call slavery. Period. Point blank. Being known for perpetrating and maintaining a harsh working conditions or a system of enslavement is indicative of being allowed to perpetrate and maintain a system of slavery. Dark history stated a sharecropper would raise $500 worth of cotton and the plantation owner would tell him he used $697 worth of material and the sharecropper actually owed the plantation owner $197. I think this lasted for, well, they say for about 50, this system lasts for about, unchecked for about 50 years. Maybe more, because I count like 56 since the so-called end of the Civil War. So, and white folk got upset when black folk united politically to demand a fair wage. Really? Then white folk became enraged when black folk defended themselves fighting fire with fire. They shot at them, they shot back at them. I just, they had no right to defend themselves and should humble themselves under the terrorist threat of white folk. And that's kind of hard for a man coming back from World War One to get some. I don't know if they had any taste to that, but they do look at it. You came back from that, and the guy's going to, you know, shoot to the building, that's not going to scare you. That's going to put you on alert. And the guard responded. When you think, these white folk had a history of violently humbling black folk who did not submit to their will. You can see how they could go into a frenzy, murdering those they had been murdering for centuries with impunity. Then white folk lied and exaggerated about what had really happened on that dreadful day. If a man should know why he was going to kill a man before he kills him, all this mob needed to know is that it is a black man, and that was reason enough. They didn't even care if the rumors was true. They just came and, you know, the threat of a slave uprising, and there were many, I have read, I have been told, these guys fought the whole time. Individuals, small groups, larger groups, They fought. They resisted the whole time in slavery. Don't get misled by those Hollywood versions of slavery. Anyway, the threat of a slave uprising, and there were many, appeared to trigger the same kind of unrestrained violence that had been, that had tortured, injured, and destroyed black people and black communities in the past. Many white folk gathered to attack. Many. Some came from across state lines. What was that white kid's name? But came across state lines with an illegal M15. Killed two people, shot another, and was able to just walk down the street. You know, and they told him to go ahead. That's what that brings to mind. I'm sure he's not the only person that came across state lines to aid the so-called police, quasi-military force that was facing the mob. So anyway, they came, across state lines to assist the mob, police, and military, set on murdering Elaine's black community, and they did just that. Behind the false flag allegation of a black uprising. Murdering whites in Elaine when blacks were the people who were actually under attack and being murdered. Hundreds were murdered and many were convicted. Many blacks, I think, had a Supreme Court trial with 12 people. Hell, whites had violently responded to slave uprisings before. Why would this uprising be any different? You would think, because there's no uprising, there's not supposed to be any slavery, and it was a shot in self-defense. But it seems like, just like in the days when they had chattel slavery, a slave who defended himself against his violent master was viewed as a threat, perceived as a threat, and treated thusly, violently. So that's why they started these police forces and slave catchers and all these different people to keep these slaves in order, in their place, oppressed, afraid, and childlike. Why would it be any different now in 2021? Because I can see where a lot of the attitude of about why is the difference between how quasi-military organizations react to crowds of peaceful black people protesting and a mob of white folks literally breaking into the house. You can kind of see that that's just the way it is for them, It ain't nothing new. That thing that happened on the 6th, I think it was the 6th in Washington, how there wasn't a bunch of white folks laying on the ground, dead, and it's just amazing, to some people. But it's just par for the course if you pay attention to the history of how white people respond to white people acting out and how they respond to black folks acting out, be it peaceful or violent, doesn't matter. Anything that black people tend to do in defense of themselves is viewed as a threat. And threats are dealt with violently in the slave community, on the plantation community, in the oppressed community, in the oppressed state. The Civil War ended in 1865, they said. 1865 from 1990 equal 54 years of being forced to be tied, continued to be forced to be tied to the land as a post-Civil War slave. Freedom was a hell, very much like the hell black folk had already been subjected to. If you have visions of citizenship, and that goes for us today, it is because you know you don't actually have citizenship, but you have your sights on exercising the citizenship maybe you thought you had earned. What do you? Note, a section of the platform that the union had in the church, right, stated, many families are suffering because our men are forced to act as children. I thought that was really, I was like, wow, my sentiments exactly. Children are the most vulnerable population on the planet. They're one of the most vulnerable population on the planet. They are a dependent population and lack political, economical power. They are led and never become leaders. You'll never see a child president, a child mayor, a child police officer. What else? At the head of anything, you will never see a child at the head of anything that has any real power. Okay? They're never going to be over adults. They're always going to be dependent and expected to submit to the authority of the adult. In the slave population, the slave is the child, and the kidnappers, plantation owners, whatever you want to call them, are the authoritative figure. They rule by intimidation and violence. So they are abusive to their children, if you want to look at it that way. There's a saying that children should be seen and not heard. That is what it is like for a man to be reduced to the status of a child. That is the status white America had assigned to black America. When children speak when they should not, when children speak when they should not, they get reprimanded. When that child is actually a man, he gets murdered. In short, a black man who resists the will of white authority is perceived as an offensive, lethal threat. It still appears to be a common theme today. Any black man who resists the will of white authority is perceived as an offensive, lethal threat. We see that in some of these shootings. These guys can just get away with saying, I feared for my life. Shooting man in the back 7 times, he's fearful. Anyway, back to the New York Times article. I've just connecting the dots, looking at the relationship between then and now, and it sounds like we still in it. Looks like we are still in it, black president or not, black congressmen, people in the House or not, black mayors or not, black police captains or whatever or not, looks like we are still neck deep in it. From the New York Times article, they said World War One brought changes to the Delta, right? As it did in northern urban centers, right? Changes that those guys with those white men was working in those factories, went to war. It's jobs opening, black folks come get some jobs. I think even women work some of those jobs too. Right? And so that means people leaving the Delta plantation to earn three times as much in the factories, right? So that's you putting a hurting on the plantation owners, and you know, corporate America is coming up, right? Because I know they were happy to work their hands off for three times the amount of money they made in sharecropping. Anyway, men and women migrated to northern factories and joined the military, creating a labor shortage in the cotton fields and the lumber mills, they said. Women received domestic allotment checks from the men in the military, giving them cash beyond the control of the planters. Consequently, plantation owners and lumber mills had to pay higher wages to have the cotton picked or timber milled. Is that familiar to anybody? Can you relate to that today? How folks want want higher wages in order to live. They don't want to work for these wages that appear to be similar to this sharecropping stuff. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I can't live off. They couldn't live off. They could hardly live off of that, and people can hardly live off some of the wages that they earn today. Even worse, the planners' perspective, the much feared racial industrial workers of the world, or wobblies they call, were rumored to be organizing in the fields and mills. They said of the world. So that reminds me of this George Floyd thing when this protest took place all over the world, sparked protests all over the world. Well, World War One, they feared racial industrial workers of the world organizing in the fields and mills. So the slavery, the system of slavery is worldwide. You can't fear that if you don't have a system of slavery that's worldwide, a system of oppression that's worldwide. It's part of the reason why this thing with after George Floyd caught on fire, set fire to the world. Nothing new. So, black men and women also answer that call for employment in the factories in the North. History, right? This is from the History Channel. The Great Migration was the relocation of more than 6 million African Americans from the rural South to cities in the North. I said it took place from 1916 to 1970. Driven from their homes by unsatisfactory economic opportunities and harsh segregationist laws, right? Jim Crow. I remember they had a saying, you got to eat crow. I wonder if that came from the Jim Crow thing. Anyway, black Americans came north to take advantage of that three times on greater salary thing. That's not what they did, but, you know, basically that's what they did, you know. The Great Migration, African-Americans began to build a new place for themselves in public life that would exert enormous influence in actively confronting racial prejudice as well as economic, political, and social challenges to create a black urban culture the decades to come, right? So they started coming up, as we like to say on the streets. After the Civil War, the Reconstruction era, white supremacy was largely resorted across the South. In the 1870s, and the segregationist policies known as I said, Jim Crow, soon became the law of the land. Right? So prejudices were interpreted by law. Some of the problems we have in today from this kind of stuff. Southern black people were forced to make their living working the land due to black codes and the sharecropping system, which I just told you, you cannot get out of, which offered little in the way of economic opportunity, especially after a boll weevil epidemic eating up the cotton. Boll weevils eat cotton in 1898, caused massive crop damage across the South. So, just looking at that, what we just talked about in, from the history, a government systemic attack and dissemination of black leadership, black movements, and progress is indicative of the government and or people acting under the authority of government's desire or need to oppress any uprising, be it violent, peaceful, ethical, moral, or not. An uprising is an uprising and is apparently addressed in the same manner. The good old plantation owner and white supremacy supporters have historically dealt with uprising by any means that they felt like it, just as long as it was very violent and vicious. This generally included terrorizing, assaulting, mutilating, raping, and murdering the very person they are oppressing. If an oppressed, victimized person or persons choose to defend themselves against the violence and discrimination of their white aggressor or oppressor, they are viewed as a heightened threat and demonized. Ooh, he's scary. We got to kill him. I guess that's the same as the cave bear or wild in the woods. This intergenerational cultural socialization of whites that perpetuates the idea that black people are a threat, less than human, their lives mean nothing, and therefore have to be kept in their place, is a threat to black peoples. That place they need to be kept happens to be under the ball of white supremacy's foot, and sometimes swinging from a tree. It's funny how white folks took it out on black workers, but not the corporation that hired them. Not that that would have been much better. It was apparently okay when blacks were unemployed and systemically discriminated against during the hiring processes for the better jobs, and not received well when the scenario, at least the better job part, was in reverse. Let's face it, a black man competing for a white man's job in 1919, apparently a black man could lose his life for that. Anyway, they said most of the Americans were unaware of the killings in Elaine and continued to go about their own lives. Ain't that something? They said with the heroism of the black soldiers in the war that enhanced the struggle for black freedom, causing industrialists and plantation owners to brace themselves for the return of black veterans. Right? So these guys already know what it's like to fight a war and fight oppression and racism, because they had just been over in Europe doing it for some cats that look just like the cats that's got his foot on his neck over here, and shoulder to shoulder with some of them guys, I'm sure. a racialized violence spread in both northern and southern cities during the Red Summer of 1919. So these brothers coming home and from the war, white guys coming home from the war and finding things is different. They don't like the change that they see because that change looks a little dark. And that darkness is blocking them from getting that job that they used to have. So you got black folks coming up and white folks being angry at the come up. Delta plantations, planters, they call them, were paying close attention. So they was bracing for this. So that response maybe wasn't even a knee-jerk response. It's what they do. They were bracing for this. I already was looking for this. How are we going to deal with these black killers coming home from the war? We didn't train them. They didn't kill white folk over there. And it probably killed some white folk over here. And when that did happen, their worst fears were realized. And I guess they projected, hey, they going to kill white people, all of us. They going to kill all of us. They ain't afraid to do that. They ain't afraid to kill one. They ain't afraid to kill 100. Maybe that's the mentality. Maybe they feel they got it coming. So they feared the black soldier, a man who was war-torn. I don't know. I'm not white. And I can't imagine the hatred they have for black people, some white people. I can't imagine that. The violence occurred not only in the more familiar urban centers of Chicago and Washington, but also in the hinterlands of Omaha, Charleston, South Carolina, Longview, Texas, and the plantation region of Arkansas, of the Arkansas Delta. Isn't Bill Clinton from Arkansas? Just give you a little idea or a more detailed idea of what happened. The meeting to support prosperity was targeted. The black prosperity, that may be good for black folks, technically. But some white folks have disagreed with that. That's bad for them, bad for white folks, and so they make it bad for black folks. So late in the evening of September 30th, 1990, black sharecropper families gathered in the Hoopshire Church near Elaine. They came to discuss membership in an organization membership in an organization called the Progressive Farmers and Household Union, which would help them secure a fair price for the cotton they pick to buy land. Now, just because you guys don't know, even though I don't believe that people can own the earth, you don't live long enough to own the earth. You can use it, but land ownership is very important in this system. Anyway, they aim to hire a lawyer to represent them with the landlords. The landlords, basically the slave masters, the plantation owners, the planters. So they can fight these people through their own courts with their own law. The 1919 cotton crop was the most profitable in history. Made gobs of money, right? And they stood to make a good amount of money, he said. At 11 p.m., a band of white men shot into the church. Black guards returned to fire, killing a white agent of the Missouri Pacific Railroad. An agent from the Missouri Pacific Railroad. That tells you how racism has no boundaries. News of the shooting quickly reached the county seat of Helena. Soon, word spread that blacks were attacking soon word spread that blacks were attacking whites and Elaine. You heard? So it's, by early morning, October 1st, the sheriff sent white veterans from the American Legion post to suppress what he deemed an insurrection. You hear that? All on a word of a white dude or whoever yelling and shout. Not even true. All right, so historically, you know, white black people have been accused of crimes they never committed by white folks. Here they've been accused, judged, and sentenced to death. Calls went out to the governor for federal troops. Telephone lines to Elaine were cut. Telephone lines to Elaine were cut. Now, that's right there. I don't know if y'all are familiar with that, but you, good people don't do that. Good people not going to cut the telephone lines so you can't get help. You cut the telephone lines when you try to isolate someone you're trying to kill. You don't want them to get help. So you cut the line. You see the bad guys in the movies, right? The thief trying to break in, he cuts the lines, right? The murderer trying to break in, he cuts the lines. House gets dark, and he comes in, creepy, crawling in the house, doing his creepy thing. You know, that's this type of thing. Why are you cutting the telephone wires if you're putting down an insurrection? Throughout the day, and at least 1,000 white vigilantes came from all over the state and from Mississippi to join plantation owners, their managers, sheriffs, deputies, and the veterans to put down what they call an uprising. It was effectively an invasion. By day's end, countless black women, men, and children had been slaughtered. Nobody coming in. There's nobody to come in. Anybody that might have would have intervened, they made sure that you couldn't get in touch with them. So they cut the telephone lines. And they went to work. Basically because they wanted to. I don't know. The following morning, Governor Charles H. Burrow of Arkansas and a World War I veteran, Colonel Isaac Jenks, personally escorted 583 soldiers, including a machine gun battalion from Camp Pike in Little Rock, the state capital, to Elaine. These people are already being massacred, y'all. They're already being massacred by one horde of white folks, right? Now the actual military is coming. Colonel Jack sent all of the white women and children to Helena by train, ordered the immediate disarming of everyone, and authorized the killing of black insurgents who failed to disarm. What? That's that whole thing about a black man defending himself and being killed by authority. This sounds so familiar. Is it simply white folks' knee-jerk reaction to black people in defense of themselves to take another white man's word, condemn and murder black people? It appears to be a poor excuse to murder, simply because they have been and still want to murder black people. That could be the contributor to law enforcement's negative attitude toward black people. The perception can be incorporated in the socialization, behavior, or training of law enforcement. Maybe they are expecting an uprising because they feel they are owed something for the brutality they inflicted on black captives and their descendants. Maybe it's guilt and fear that motivates them. Then the real massacre began. The troops got there. For the next 5 days, wires is cut. They are isolated, probably surrounded, overwhelmed. Colonel Jenks and his troops, assisted by vigilantes. Sound familiar? We had vigilantes and quasi-military police force, right? When the 17-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse gunned down some folks, helping them out. Anyway, they hunted people over a 200-mile radius. Y'all heard that? 200-mile radius? You hunting black folks? That's like you can't even run. You can run, but you're going to run into them. If they hunt you 200 miles. That ain't even like a neighborhood. That ain't like an 8-block area. You can get out of 8 blocks. This is straight up wherever you go. We will find you, hunt you down, and kill you. It's a nightmare. They scorched and burned homes with families inside, slaughtered and tortured others. The troops were aided by 7 machine guns. Y'all heard that? 7 machine guns. On October the 7th, Colonel Jenks declared the insurrection over and withdrew his troops. He brought the men and women deemed insurrectionists to the Phillips County Jail in Helena. On October 31st, a grand jury indicted 122 black men and women for offenses ranging from murder to night raiding. Can y'all believe that? Did that sound familiar? Sandra Bland was stopped at the traffic stop. And she's arrested under false pretenses. Ended up dead. They say she hung herself. Even if she hung herself, she shouldn't have been in the jail to be able to do that. Because she shouldn't have been arrested. That cop should have simply just arrested her, wrote the ticket, and kept his mouth shut. But he wanted to keep her mouth shut. She was standing up for herself. So she got hit with some phony stuff. I'm giving you a lawful order. That's one of the most bogus phrases I've ever heard of police say. It's not lawful if you're not acting within the boundaries of the law. You're just acting as a racist, aggressive individual. You're not acting within the law. Anyway, I'm just connecting the dots. looking at the similarities then and now. A jury convicted 12 black men in the murders of 3 white men, even though 2 of the deaths had occurred from white people accidentally shooting each other in a frenzy. My friend likes to call these today's shooting a frenzy when you're Laquan McDonald. He was shot like 16 times, 15 while he was on the ground. He said that guy went to a frenzy. He had to, you know, he just. And I was like, wow. So it's some kind of. They go on to sting. Where they got to kill you. These guys went into it. What's that guy named that killed Laquan in Chicago? He went into it. Guy that shot the boy in the back trying to get into the car. Follow him. Even if he thought he had a knife, he created his own jeopardy by getting close to his back. What are you going to do with a knife in a car? Does it make sense? He created his own jeopardy. Anyway, you can always demonize a black guy killing and get away with it because you have the support of the community, quasi-military organizations, and in this case, the actual military. 200 miles, they hunted black people. Imagine that, y'all. 200 miles. People don't even notice it's going down with murder. They don't even know what's going on. They got murdered. The confessions of the black men had been secured through torture. Not surprised. Black people were thus blamed, sentenced, and jailed for their own massacre. Ain't that something? And this just comes from standing up, defending self-defense. Ain't no self-defense for black folks. And maybe that's why these police tend to shoot a black man that's not, as they say, obeying a lawful order, like Sandra Bland. That man didn't give her no lawful order. Put your cigarette out and all that, turn your music down. That had nothing to do. You writing a ticket, write your ticket, go on about your business. It's not a lawful order. Then she resisted the illegal arrest that he made, which nobody pointed out. So, that's a female. These guys are, I don't know, a black man who resists is a lethal threat, I guess. What's the brother's name? He got choked out in New York. And this stuff stems from their past. And, whether you resist or not, in this situation, you were hunted down and killed because of what another black man did. So, like I'm saying, maybe that's why black people get targeted, because they have always been targeted, because they have always been feared. It's always been a practice to put a black man down is out of control. If he's not being humble, and I mean humble, in the sight of authority, be that authority ethical or not, legal or not, if he's not being humble in the sight of authority, put him down. And I mean to sleep. They said local officials and businessmen conducted their own investigation of what had transpired in the Elaine area. They produced a predictable narrative that resembled those dated back to slavery. Well, it is slavery. They're sharecroppers. That's just another form of slavery. In their view, a deliberately planned insurrection had occurred. Insurrection. Where black sharecroppers had intended to murder the plantation owners to seize the land. The findings blame outside agitators for stirring up ignorant sharecroppers. Ignorant sharecroppers. Okay? They're trying to say that you being aware that you're being cheated and enslaved and trying to do something about it, you ignorant. They're calling those people ignorant. The committee's narrative appeared in the newspapers all over the country. Colonel Jenks' report of his mission supported the view, claiming only two black people and one of his corporals had died. Only two black people and one of his corporals had died. He praised his troops for their restraint and suppressing the rebellion. You see the similarities here? You got quasi-military groups. These guys kill people, and then they just doctor up what happened. Looked like he had a gun. Other cop got to back his story up. Then, you know, you're shooting a man 15. I'm just using the Quan McDonald scenario. And it gets written up that they control the narrative. This is controlling the narrative. Basically lying about what's happening. So that they don't look like the murderers that they are. And we see that occurring with these police shootings. Lying. Exaggerating. So they don't look like the monster that they actually are. And they are monsters. Those who do monstrous things are monsters. The official narrative presented a picture at odds with reality. They say, according to several accounts from white witnesses, both vigilantes and the troops committed acts of barbarism. Barbaric, they say that's like, you know, they're using barbarian as somebody not from here, but barbarians are viewed as a very vicious people and things like that. So they're saying these people are basically doing that Friday 13th. What's the boy's name with it? The axe, kind of always stabbing people. That kind of like stuff to people. Well, the plantation stuff. It's the same stuff. Cutting up people, burning people, you know, innocent people, just because you're black. Just because I fear your blackness. Just because I fear you rising. Just because I can't and get away with it. They said a local school teacher saw 28 black people killed, their bodies thrown into a pit and burned, and 16 African Americans killed, their bodies hanging from a bridge outside of Helena. That's a frenzy, y'all. Just going, everything getting your way. Everything you see is black, kill it. That's a frenzy. You ever seen what's the name of those fish? Piranha fish? You jump in you fall in that water with that piranha, they go into a frenzy, a feeding frenzy. They got these little sharp teeth. Well, that's what these guys going into, a killing frenzy. Killing frenzy of another human being, some innocent people. All innocent people, actually. A Memphis reporter described events on October 2nd. After the troops arrived, troops and vigilantes, he noted, went into the cane base in search of Negro desperados. Yeah, they were desperate, all right, to live, leaving dead bodies lying in a road a few miles outside of the city. Enraged citizens fired at the bodies of the dead Negroes as they rolled out of Helena toward Elaine. They were shooting them after they killed them. All this hatred. Still others described the barbarism of cutting off the ears or toes of dead Negroes or for souvenirs. Did y'all hear this? This is 1919. And the dragging of their bodies through the street of Elaine. It was a brother that was drugged by the back of a truck here not too long ago, a couple of years ago. Gerald B. Lambert, the founder of Listerine, who owned 21,000 acres of near Elaine, saw white men spread through the woods firing at any suspicious person. A steel gondola car was hauled back and forth on the railroad track, he said, adding, the men inside firing from the shelter of the steel wall of the car, shooting black people. He also told how soldiers brought a suspected union leader to his company store for interrogation, poured kerosene over his body, and you know what happened. The account that best captured the perspective of the sharecroppers came from Ida Wells Barnett, the legendary anti-lynching crusader and journalist. She had been driven from her home in Memphis to Chicago because of her activism. One of the convicted 12 wrote to her from prison, requesting help. Courageously, she dressed up as a sharecropper and went to Arkansas. There, she interviewed the 12 prisoners accused of murder, their wives, and many others, publishing her findings in a 1920 pamphlet. The account that best captures the perspective of the sharecroppers came from her. Miss Wells' testimony described the sheer horror of the massacre from those who endured and lived to tell their stories. 200 miles, they hunted people, black folks down. One union member, Ed Ware, told her that men had fired into the Hofstra church, killing several people, then burned it down the next day with bodies inside. When he returned home, 150 men came to ransack his house, seizing his union meeting on minutes and his Masonic Lodge book. As they surrounded his home, another man inside, Charlie Robinson, tried to run away. He was elderly and handicapped and ran too slowly. They shot him and left him to die. They stole Ware's cow, two mules, one horse, a farm wagon, his Ford car, and various household goods. He lost 121 acres of cotton and corn. Many families describe how they had to run into the woods for safety from bloodthirsty mobs, hoping to surrender themselves to the federal troops for safety. Instead, the troops either shot or arrested them. Okay. On YouTube, Dark History stated that in the 1919 Elaine massacre, blacks hid in the woods for safety, and when the federal troops arrived, they ran out thinking the troops would help them. Instead, the troops viewed the people running towards them as a threat and gunned them down. Remember, they had a Gatling gun. They had some kind of machine gun. Not the Thompson. They had the Gatling or some kind of Gatling. The newer version of the Gatling gun, I think. The whole concept of fearing for your life, validating the use of lethal force, incidentally, on black people who trusted, even hoped, that they would save them from the same fate the troopers sentenced them to death. Fearing for their life. So, I'm just saying this to say that to connect the dots to the attitudes of some white folks, as some people like to say, all white folks not that way. But it's enough of them that way to cause these type of incidents to still perpetuate abuse of authority, prejudice, racism, and the quasi-military organizations, the courts, and the military. Vigilantes from Mississippi seized another union member, Lula Black, and her four children from her house, knocked her down, pistol whipped, and kicked her, then took her to jail, carrying an axe with their guns. They then moved to another home, where they murdered yet another union member, Frances Hall. In a final act of disrespect, they tied her dress over her head and left her body on the side of the road for several days. Look at this mess. 79-year-old Ed Coleman had remained at home with his wife when people fleeing Hampshire came to his house and warned them to leave. They made black folks get up out of their homes. They had nothing to do with it. Took it out on every black person. As they ran from the posse, Coleman saw his neighbor, Jim Miller, and his family burned alive in their house. After hiding for 2 days in the woods, the Colemans returned home to find dead bodies of women and children. Women and children scattered about their community. So, I mean, if this attitude is being perpetuated from 1990 in these peoples, these quasi-military organizations and the military, there's not much hope for a black man walking down the streets in America. And it speaks to why there's a disproportionate amount of violent murder applied to black folks. So I don't know. Seems like we just can't get out of this particular hellhole. Can't get out of this because people can't get out of their particular hellhole. The hell that you must be living in your mind and your heart to even think that it's okay to do some stuff like that to anybody. Just because you can't. Just because you hate. If you hate somebody, stay away from them. You have no right to be an official at any level in political and politics. You definitely have no business being in law enforcement. You just have no place over seeing the lives of people. If this is the kind of attitude you have toward people. And I'm, you know, it's a lame mascot. This is some new stuff for me. Because I heard of Black Wall Street. And I heard that black people, I think Rosewood was probably the most famous one because they made a movie about that. And the recent stuff we heard about, you know, how they, you know, did what they did to people. But this Elaine thing is it's atrocious. 200 miles? Can you imagine that? Running and you running is not going to help you. You got to hide. You got to find a place you can hide. You got your kids. You're trying to keep them alive. You're trying to keep your woman alive, your mother. Your mother, your grandmother, you know what I'm saying? He's got, oh. Anyway, Ms. Wells Barnett provided hard evidence of the massacre, but it took the Supreme Court to expose the truth to national attention. In Moore versus Dempsey, the court in 1923 overturned the convictions of the six Elaine 12, arguing that the confessions had been secured through torture. The trial had occurred in a setting dominated by a mob spirit, violating the prisoner's right to due process. Seems like a lot of people's rights to due process are violated by quasi-military individuals assuming or pretending to assume that their lives are in danger and murdering said black individuals. All that you didn't respond to a lawful order is a bunch of crap. That's not a death sentence. I don't care if he's a criminal or not. It's because he's not listening to you. You don't get to kill him. If you're afraid, take off the badge and the gun. And we got guys like that And as you see, we're still getting people killed, like the brother in Georgia, like Trayvon Martin. He's not even an officer. Killed Trayvon. Got away with it. Well, they got away with it. So it's what happens. It seems like that's supposed to be the thing that we're supposed to just take in America. Around the world, probably. You're just supposed to suck this up, nigga. The decision by the justice was aided by two white men involved in the massacre who reversed their previous testimony. They now verify that the planters had gone to Hoopshire Church to destroy the Union and that the posse had killed their own men instead of the black people who had been accused. I don't know. They got a law, felony murder. Well, kind of relevant. I'm not going to go there. But, you know, that's some crazy mess-ish. They describe the wholesale massacre of hundreds of unarmed and defenseless black people and the torture used to secure confessions. The murders, deaths, violence, and terror continued long after the troops had gone and the convicted men had been released. These dudes just went to a serious smorgasbord of murdering people. You have rights until they decide to take them away, if you have rights at all. Is it possible to establish an accurate death toll? Military reporters were initially vague. Local authorities blocked press covers. Many died when the massacre had occurred, leaving accounts of the slaughter to witnesses. So many had died that were there, leaving accounts to witnesses. Stories were passed down through families of the victims. Estimates are ranged from 25 to 853. The latter from an Arkansas Gazette reporter who named no source. Walter Wright of the NAACP reported first that more than 100 African Americans were killed, later changing it to 250. At least two historians, including, have settled on a reasonable estimate of 200 people, recognizing that the toll was most likely far greater. I think so, too. They're throwing people in graves. Probably a whole lot of unmarked graves. But hell, they're just leaving people on the side of the road dead, just killing them. What is certain is that the massacre caused a long shadow of decades, for decades, with fear of reprisal, silencing those who witnessed and survived the terror. The senators of the massacre have begun to organize to make their stories heard. The Elaine Legacy Center, in conjunction with the DeWitt Proctor Conference, held a truth hearing in February where 12 commissioners heard several descendants convey powerful stories of the massacre handed down through their family. It's like crazy. Nothing happened. You know what I'm saying? I don't care what they do now. Not really, it's not addressed. Reparations, what is it? You know, many wept as they told the stories about this year, you know. Basically, nothing happened. They seek redress, not in the form of apologies, but in recognition of the harm done and the way generations continue to suffer the consequences. The descendants of the wealthier white perpetrators, they insist, have profited and continue to do so from the suffering and loss that their families endured in 1990. Americans have yet to reckon with this horrible past. You know, man, you got that right. Elaine is probably the largest massacre of black people in post-Civil War history. Yet no federal investigation was ever conducted. Yet no federal investigation was ever conducted. No federal investigation. So that's what happens when people policing themselves. When you got the murderer investigating himself, that's some crazy mess right there. That's what we got going on with these, some of these police shootings. He's supporting them. They're going to support the murderer. They know he's wrong. They're going to control his narrative, twist it in a way where this guy is not what he did. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it, y'all, about the Lane massacre. You know, let's say they went on to say America cannot address the inequality, poverty, inadequate education, racially based criminal justice system, and the limited life chances of black people that define contemporary society until the nation confronts and acknowledges this history. The obligations of the past weigh heavily upon the present, they said. And I say, we as black people, we need to connect our own dots so we can get a real look at what we're dealing with. And that goes for black people, civilians, police officers, soldiers, in government. You need to really take a look at what's happening here, because not much has changed. Sure, we can date white women, white men. If that's the biggest thing that you can, if that's the biggest thing that happened to you in your life, you don't want much. Moving a white neighborhood, I don't get that. That's almost as bad as them not wanting you to live in a neighborhood. To me, you want to live in a neighborhood that's not people like you, but white people. And these are white people killing black folks in 200-mile radius. You trying to move in their neighborhood. Like, really? Not only is it a group of people doing it, law enforcement, ex-military and military, and doing it knowingly. They're killing innocent people. They're killing women and children. They know damn well that the children ain't do nothing to nobody. Those women not doing anything. They know, but they had probably planned this, and it's probably how they deal with what they're used to, or how they're used to dealing with slave insurrections. This time they know they got slaves that know how to rumble because they told them how to kill. So they had to overwhelm them. And that's exactly what they did. And so maybe that's the attitude. Maybe that's the attitude of the police. We got to overwhelm these brothers, make them fear us. I don't know, but that's the end of my story for the night. That's a hard pill to swallow. I want to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show, Blog Talk Radio. Mr. Kenneth Jones, host of Black Urban America on Tuesdays, 8 p.m. I want to thank everybody for listening in, calling in. Until next week, each one reach one, each one teach one. Do your own research. Don't take it from me. Peace, y'all.
Be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.